Good morning to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Well, can you merge good business practices with strong moral principles? Today, that's what we'll be talking about today on The Front Page. It's in relation to a new book called The Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from the Catholic Teaching, and they supply the answers. The authors of that book, Dr. Andrew Abella and Dr. Joseph Capizzi, and Dr. Capizzi joins us today on the program. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Well, apparently you do believe that you can do good business and still be a good person.
I do believe that. In fact, I believe you should do good business, be a good person, because it will lead to good business.
And you base a lot of what you are talking about on teachings from the Catholic Church.
Right. That's right. A lot of what we have in our book are excerpts from Catholic documents, encyclicals, papal speeches, things like that, that relate to business.
You're an associate professor of moral theology at Catholic University of America. I should point that out as we move forward. And when I think about business ethics, Dr. Capizzi, do you think that most people really do try to do the right thing?
You know, in fact, I do. One of the things I think that Andrew and I noticed as we study these things and as we speak to business leaders is that, in fact, most business people do try to do the right thing. They generally go into businesses because of a love for some product or some idea, not for profit, not for crass goals, but instead out of some sense of obligation to themselves or their families or to a company. I think most often, you know, more often than not, they're motivated by good intention.
Why does business get such a bad rap then in some circles?
Well, there have been some pretty astounding instances of people not doing good things, and those make the papers. I think, too, it's an easy target. There's a lot of wealth resentment. That's a common place in human history, right, to be resentful of those who have more. There's good reasons why people target businesses, but you know, I don't think they're any more susceptible to bad behavior than any other area of life.
I'll ask you your opinion on this. It seems to me I've seen more of this type of talk as we've had an economy for the last 5 or 6 years that frankly has not done that well and not produced enough
right.
good paying jobs.
That's right. One of the things I think that you see as you study history is that the classes are often thought of as pitted against each other, particularly like the classes of workers and the classes of owners, capital and labor, right? They're often thought of as antagonistic forces. And that's actually one of the things that Catholic teaching has really directed its force against, is the idea that these are antagonistic rather than cooperative enterprises. These should be things that, in fact, work together. But there are lots of forces that like to lead people to think that they're opposed to each other when they really are not.
What made you and Dr. Abella start to look at this and decide to study it and perhaps write a book?
Both of us speak before business people all the time. And one of the things that kept coming up was they had these kinds of questions. They themselves are subject to the perception that business is sort of necessarily opposed to good behavior. And they kept raising all these kinds of questions. So we thought, well, let's go back and look at some of these questions through the context of a teaching that's developed over 200 years on the morality of business. So that was one thing. The second thing was probably the financial collapse and some of the kind of, you know, quite frankly, astounding stories of bad behavior by business people. So those two things sort of pushed us in this direction.
You break it down into a lot of different categories. You talk about advertising, hiring and firing, investing, outsourcing,
right.
unions,
right.
and that kind of stuff.
That's right. Those questions themselves are questions that were put to us. Almost all the questions in the book are not questions we came up with on our own, but are questions that we kept hearing over and over from business leaders, from employees. And we just try to put as many of them in there as specifically as possible and then attach different insights from teaching to those questions.
Do you get the argument sometimes that people will say, well, theology and the way we live in this modern-day world really don't match up that well?
All the time. That's a common assumption of people is that religious perspectives either don't have anything to say, they're irrelevant to contemporary concerns, or they should have nothing to say. Even if they did have something to contribute, they should be excluded because of some conception of separation of church and state, very, very broadly applied to the way we live our lives. And that's definitely something that we're opposed to as well. That what the book tries to do is show people that, or presume really, that people live the way they live their lives according to certain kinds of fundamental principles, whether they're religious or otherwise. And that's a good thing. We shouldn't think that we can separate fundamental moral commitments from the way we practice business or the way we live our lives more generally.
Is it frustrating to hear that argument, and how do you answer it?
It's very frustrating to hear that argument because, as I said, most people do live their lives from certain fundamental moral commitments. They don't, in fact, compartmentalize the way they think that we should compartmentalize religion. So what makes it frustrating is that religion is singled out as something that's excluded from sort of application to the rest of our lives when other things are allowed those kinds of applications. I try to point that out. Look, you're living according to other fundamental commitments, and often those commitments, in fact, are religious. People just don't identify them as religious because religion means something quite specific to them. So you just try to point out to them, look, you are living according to fundamental moral commitments, which is a good thing. These are just another version of fundamental moral commitments, and often there's a lot of compatibility between religious fundamental moral commitments and other kinds of commitments people have in their lives.
Yeah, I would have to believe when you talk about the principles of right and wrong, they should be timeless.
They should be timeless. The more you study religions, what you see is a lot of agreements about those kinds of fundamental moral commitments. They're not typically opposed. There are things like do not lie, do not cheat, don't take advantage of other people, particularly people who are weaker than you, obviously don't kill. Almost all of those kinds of commitments transcend religious perspectives.
When you guys were doing your study, did you look at business from the standpoint of a historical, relationship with the way it is now and the way it was maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago? And are we doing business in a more moral fashion now, or was it better then?
That's a really hard question. It's a great question. I think what you see nowadays is more codes of ethics in business, right? There are a lot more regulations and specified, rules of behavior. Some people will point out that those are necessary in part because people haven't internalized those sort of good ways of operating. So there's a kind of decline in people's assumptions about the way you should behave, and therefore they have to be specified in law or in codes of ethics. So you could point to both of those things sort of as saying, on the one hand, it points to a decline. On the other hand, you do have much more specifications of rules of behavior. It's a really complicated question, and it, quite frankly, would merit more study than I've actually done.
I guess the one part about this, the reason I asked that question is that I look at our society today and I'm wondering if it is as spiritual perhaps as it used to be. You read different things when they study Christianity in the United States and they say, less people consider themselves as church-going people or as being religious than perhaps they did days gone by. And I'm wondering how that may have impacted business and the business relationships that we have on an everyday basis.
I think that's a great point. One of the things you see, and I'm sure you're aware of this, is that most people, if they identify as religious or more commonly spiritual, will identify it as an individual commitment. I'm spiritual, but I don't need an established church or any sort of established community to help me with that spirituality. One of the drawbacks of that approach, of course, is that it becomes kind of individualistic, right? And associated with that would be that, you treat other commitments as individualistic as well, whether they're business commitments or commitments to family. Everything becomes understood as sort of filtered through the individual, him or herself. And that can be a problem. That could actually relate to the way, like a decline in loyalty, let's say, towards businesses, towards other institutions. And that's not a good thing.
One thing that bothers me is when people think about business, they often start at the top and they think of business in terms of, say, Microsoft or AT&T and things like
right.
that. And most businesses in our country, I think 75 to 80% of them are small businesses. They might be mom and pop shops.
That's right.
And I think you get a skewed viewpoint from doing that.
Absolutely right. That's right. Like even the scandals I spoke about in business, you know, over the past decade or so, those were all enormous, right? Businesses, and provocative and enormous, interesting scandals. But the vast majority of business is conducted at a much lower level, which is why, again, like I said at the beginning, with great confidence, that look, most people are really doing the right thing in their businesses. They want to do the right thing because most people are these small business operators employing people who they, whom they go to get to know quite well, whom they, they want to see prosper. They don't want to treat them poorly. They become attached to them in many different ways. That's the level of most businesses. And most of those people are not in it for profit. You know, they're not primarily driven by profit. It's not to say that they don't want to do well. They don't want, of course they want their business to succeed, but it's never simply about profit. Right. If you go to like a pizza store down the street, right, the guy's there, not there because he's trying to make $1 million. He's there because he loves what he's doing.
That's a great point. And I think that when you talk about doing business, especially at the small business level, those folks run at a very airtight margin of error. I mean,
that's right.
A lot of them are not making really that much money. They live in modest homes. They drive decent cars, but nothing, that's outstanding. They're not out there with, a Rolls Royce or anything of that nature.
Right.
So they're just trying to do what they can. They're trying to treat their employees fairly, but at the same time, you mentioned it, they're in business to make a profit because they have a dream of owning their own business and doing something for themselves and their family.
That's right. And if you think, if most of us who are not business owners think about the enormous risks involved, right, it really ought to temper our attitude towards these people. There's an enormous amount of risk and anxiety in running your own business. And, again, they're not driven by large profit margins. They're driven because they have some idea that they want to pursue and maybe be an owner, right? It's a really, wonderful thing that our country has facilitated such, an explosion of small businesses. But these people are not they're not opposed to us. They're on our side. They fuel the economy, right? And they're trying to do good things.
What I get a little bit irked about it is in the standpoint of government asking businesses to do more to pay their workers what is called a fair or a better living wage, and at the same time you find government putting more onto businesses in terms of taxes, regulations. And even if you want to get into the Affordable Care Act, it's increasing the cost of doing business on these people. So
right,
it's making
right.
tougher for them. And when you increase the cost of doing business, it makes it tougher for these businesses to pay their workers more.
That's right. That's right. No, that's right. Any of these kinds of impediments to people doing business or taking these risks that I just described are not good. We want the government to serve the businesses. That's what government's job is, right? It's to serve us people as business owners, as people who want to start small businesses. And when the government raises obstacles to that, it's of no good to anyone, even, artificial conceptions of what a minimum wage might be. If those are depressing hiring or depressing the opening of new businesses, then they need to be rethought. You need to go right back to the drawing board and find another approach to the problem.
Was it interesting for you and Dr. Abella to go back into Catholic teachings and the Bible and start to try to apply them to modern-day business practices?
Absolutely. You'll see, if your listeners look at our book, what they'll see is there's no simple response, of course, in Scripture or in, church teaching to any specific question. We don't think of it as, okay, you've got this difficult question, like what should I pay my workers? That there's no scripture that tells you pay them X number of dollars per hour or, this is what it means to pay them a living wage. It's guidance. It's something for people to use, to reflect upon, to pray about, perhaps to open up their mind to something they hadn't thought about before, but it's not any sort of precise, okay, this is what you now must do. Because that's not the way Scripture works. That's not the way church teaching works.
I guess it starts with the individual as a person, doesn't it? If you're a good person, perhaps, then you'll be a good person who operates a business.
absolutely right. That's right. The key here is to be a good person, and everything else will fall into place.
Again, we're on the front page today. The book is A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. Our guest is Dr. Joseph Capizzi, one of the authors of that book, along with Dr. Andrew Abella. We will take a break on Front Page, come back with more right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Eat Gallery in historic downtown Maysville. Eat Gallery features original and unique gifts, including local artwork, fine jewelry, gemstones, sculptures, and natural art from around the world. Eat Gallery offers heirlooms, including earrings, bracelets, necklaces, and original artwork by Rob Weingartner and Fred Weisner. Open Tuesdays through Fridays, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eat Gallery in Maysville is online at eatgallery.com.
Again, the book is A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. Our guest is one of the authors of that book, Dr. Joseph Capizzi. And Dr. Capizzi, business owners face, I would believe, almost on a daily basis, some sort of ethical dilemma, whether it's a small one, whether it's a big one. And I guess two of the dilemmas, I guess, that they face fairly regularly are in the basis of hiring and firing people.
Right. Right. That's right. Those are... They're not even dilemmas, right? I mean, they're just sort of important, moral challenges about how you relate to people around you. On the one hand, right, often businesses require either the reduction in the size of the forces or something has gone wrong, right? A worker has done something they shouldn't have done, and they have to be let go. And then on the other end, of course, decisions about how to grow the workforce, how to make decisions among people who might be equally qualified as candidates. There's no question that those are moral issues. They relate to the character of the person making the decisions, and of course they're making judgments on the characters of those whom they might be firing or those whom they might be hiring. Very, very difficult, yet very common problems or, I guess, acts of businesses. And because of their commonality, there's no sense that it's wrong, to terminate an employee or wrong to take the risk of growing a business, knowing that, there's always instability as you move forward.
Well, here's a sample of what we're talking about. Let's take it from the hiring standpoint. A friend of ours, say, comes to us and says, you know what, I've got a son who needs a job. You've got a position open. Would you hire him? Now you've right. got someone else who's already applied for this job who's more qualified than the friend of the son, and you've got to choose the person that you should hire. And that's not an easy decision to make, I would think.
It's not an easy decision to make, and we don't make the problem easier by supposing that it's simply wrong to hire a friend's son, right? I mean, obviously you have an obligation or a certain kind of relationship with friends, and those are important relationships. On the other hand, of course, you have the obligation to the business itself. And in the example you cited, the one candidate, the non-friend or non-son of the friend, is the more qualified candidate. Given the necessities of business, given the fragility of businesses, one would think typically that the good of the business has to override the bonds of friendship, and perhaps, we should know that the bonds of friendship shouldn't be tested by those kinds of judgments, right? If it's, in fact, the best interest of the business, the friend should understand that. But that's not to say these are not difficult questions, and they're probably very, very common, especially as you get down to the level of small businesses.
When you talk about morals and ethics in business, advertising comes into play, I would think, too, fairly often. Telling the truth about your business at the same time trying to sell your business to people because you need more clientele.
Right. That's right. Well, there's always an obligation to tell the truth, right? And that obligation has to be expressed in advertising. Now, the truth, of course, sort of rubs up against subjective opinion. You may recall it because Papa John's, right, was in some suit about its claims about its pizzas, right? Better quality with better ingredients, better quality. I think was the motto. And what does better mean, right? Better ingredients. Does that mean fresher ingredients? Does it mean better tasting ingredients? To whom Are the ingredients better tasting? It's not that it's dishonest to believe your ingredients are better for, you know, reasons that other people might not agree with, right? You know, somebody might say fresher ingredients are better. Somebody else might say, well, no, it's just which ones taste better. So there is an obligation to be honest, but there's a wide room of, you know, maneuvering within subjective opinion that is not necessarily dishonest.
What about in dealing with unions, Dr. Capizzi, that you have, say, in your shop, and you've got to deal with them fairly, and at the same time you have to hope that they're dealing with you on a fair basis, asking for what they need, not asking for more than they need.
Right.
Can it get into that game of one-upsmanship?
Yeah. Union issues are very difficult issues, even from the aspect of the church's teaching on this. Among the first things the church said when she began to speak about business problems was that workers have the right to form association, and by which they meant unions. This, of course, at the time was being denied. It was a contentious issue. You know, can workers, in fact, form associations of, you know, the employees for the purposes of negotiation? The church said, yes, of course they can, and it understood that as a sort of derivation of the principle of the right of people to associate, which we find in our own Constitution. Now, that those were obviously necessary historically at one point. They serve all kinds of goods for the workers. On the other hand, we're all aware of the corruptions associated with unions, and I think unions have a particularly bad name today because of those corruptions. The right to associate remains. The right of workers to associate, you know, in unions remains something that the church will defend, and I think that good morality will defend. But it doesn't defend them acting corruptly, getting more pay for less work. The unions themselves are subject to moral behavior, rules of moral behavior, and if they don't operate in that way, then they need to be criticized.
You know, I think you're right. I think people should have the option of joining a union if that's what they choose to do. But I know that some states require that if a shop is a union shop, you have to join that union. There are now right-to-work states where you have the option of joining a union if you want to, but you don't have to if you don't want to. In your opinion, which is a better way to go?
Anything where somebody is, sort of forced into doing something against their will is going to be morally suspect. So any time that people are forced to join unions against their judgment is, generally speaking, going to be a bad thing. I think the problem, if somebody was arguing from a union perspective against me, would be, well, listen, if you allow people to opt out, it undermines the union. Basically, you know, you've signed the death certificate of that union, because what will happen is the employers will hire people who opt out of, union membership. That's the kind of sort of, you know, contingent question that's going to have to be put at a much more local level. That's where, like, the teaching I'm talking about is not specific enough to say always this or always that. There's going to have to be some sort of prudential calculation. Here this works, or here this is necessary, there it's not. And those are real issues.
We're about to wrap up on the show. How could folks get a copy of your book, A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching?
I think the easiest way is just to go online and order one. I know Barnes & Noble still has copies available. Last time I looked, Amazon was sold out, but, you know, it's always worth checking again. We'd love to have people read the book and send us questions. This is something that we consider a growing project. It's not a closed project, and we love hearing from people.
Well, Dr. Capizzi, thanks so much for being with us today on the Front Page. We've enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Dr. Joseph Capizzi. He, along with Dr. Andrew Abella, have written a book called A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. I'm Chuck Morales, host of Front Page. See you next time.